Welcome to the PTMA podcast. This episode, we are very lucky to have Stuart Aiken on. Stuart works with Lift the Bar. He is usually on the other side of the microphone, so to speak, in regards to he administers the interviews most of the time towards some of the best in the industry. This episode, we drew on Stu's experience and knowledge from both running a PT business for a good number of years and also his time supporting the Lift the Bar members with their businesses and also just having access and learning and interviewing. I think we ended up working out it's up to about 300 hours worth of conversations with industry experts on all different subjects. So we dive into dealing with self-doubt as a personal trainer and thoughts on leaving the industry. Really great discussion, really appreciative of Stu for taking the time. There'll be some of the things we cover in the show notes and also where you can find Stu online as well. Hope you enjoy, guys.
Very much still the Chuckle Brothers on Zoom. It's very much like to me.
It is. It very much is.
I went for a walk last night and I was thinking about this podcast and I don't know why, Ant, but when I was thinking about you, I was like, do you know what? I think you should start a show. Did you ever watch Danny Dyer's Hardest Men? wait a second, right? So I was thinking of that show and I was like, you're a little bit like Danny Dyer. And I was like, I could imagine him doing like a fitness industry's biggest pricks. And you hosting that show and being like, this guy promises six-figure guru status, dickhead.
You've done it now. That give it a week.
Yeah, that's a great start. And just to let you know, we don't edit these either at all. Not like at Lift the Bar. We don't edit any of this. So this will be a brilliant start for us. This is a brilliant start. And it gives me great ideas. And I'll let Nick kick us off anyway. And I'm just going to start my list of people that I'm going to start with that. Go on, Nick. The floor's all yours, mate.
Right. Hello, Pure Gym PTs. Hi, Mr. Right, Dan. Dan's joining us. Right, big welcome to Stuart. I'll give a very brief intro and I'll let him kind of fill in the gaps. Some of you were, well, a lot of you would have heard Stuart talking and interviewing other people. And so it's a nice little twist to put on it today where we interview Stu because he's had a big career in regards to like 12, 13 years in the industry. He's got a really, really unique viewpoint experience with his own experience working with people, with his involvement with Lift the Bar over the years, and obviously being in touch with all these incredible experts. What podcast number are you on now, Stu?
About 287, I think.
Yeah, so you're pushing like probably 300 hours worth of incredible conversations with people. We have got a subject to kind of cover, but like always, we'll go off on tangents. We've got a few questions to kind of get your thoughts on, but I'm sure we won't get through all of them as normal. So yes, Stu, do you want to give the guys a little bit of a background of who you are, what you've done and et cetera?
Sure. I mean, I really appreciate you guys asking me to be here and I appreciate the kind words on that introduction, Nick. I hope I can offer some value here. I started in the fitness industry through a way that a lot of people have in that I studied sports science and finished with a degree in strength and conditioning. It was probably about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, I started that and finished it about maybe 8 or 9 years ago now. It's hard to keep track of time like that. And I think towards the end of my my time in university was strength and conditioning, I kind of realized that athletes were not the direction I wanted to go in. And I think that was partly down to probably some doubt around my own athletic capabilities. I was like, can I even begin to coach athletes who are way better than me? I think I should probably go into personal training. And I quickly realized in personal training that it was just way more fulfilling. And you weren't just all about injury reduction or preventing injury, which is a large part of strength and conditioning. And then I got into personal training. And I think this part of the story is one that will probably be quite useful in the sense of for my last year of university, I shadowed a trainer in an independent facility, a little small gym in Dundee. And that was like my internship into the industry. It was probably the best thing I've ever done. And it's something I think every single personal trainer should do if they can. And most of us have the option to do that now. If you can spend time with another personal trainer, seeing how they do things, seeing how they program, seeing the mistakes they've made, seeing how they converse with their clients, that's an incredible way to go from your qualification to actually integrating yourself into the world of personal training. Mm. So I did that. I then got into the facility, got myself busy over the course of 3 years, had my ups and downs. I then got a job with Shreddy by Science as an online coach, who are now known as the Personal Trainer Collective, who I'm sure you'll know, with Luke Johnson. Had my time doing that, then navigated away from that and now work full-time with Lift the Bar, where the majority of my work is surrounding probably the marketing of what we do and trying to bring in new members. I mainly run the podcast, our social media stuff, a lot of coaching calls with our members, and that's a slightly long version of my history.
Awesome. So varied, very varied, in different roles, in different circumstances, which is awesome. So brings us on to, I guess, one of the subject we've kind of titled this is managing self-doubt and thoughts of leaving the industry. And I think it's really both of those two quite maybe separate subjects. Things are quite relevant over the past year, right? Because how many things have not gone as we expected, we've had to change, we've had to adapt, and favorite word, we've had to pivot our business. And obviously that's probably led to doubting yourself, doubting your service, having that confidence factor in there. So it is two separate things, but they do blend together, I feel. But I'll kick off with the first kind of question, which might set this up in general. And you kind of touched on that a little bit already. But what were the expectations of coming into the industry, and who influenced those expectations mainly, would you say, for yourself?
It was a different time back then. I mean, we spoke about this when I interviewed you guys, in the sense of I didn't really know any personal trainers back then. I had nobody in like my family or friend circle who was really into that. And the only people who I knew that were doing any form of personal training were the people that I was with at uni. And it wasn't really like personal, it was like fake personal training. You know that way where you're charging like a tenner an hour and you're kind of just like, you might do it in a field or you might one day do it in a house or something like that. It wasn't real. So most of my expectations were set upon the qualification that I went through with Fitness Training Scotland, because I shout out to them. They did a reasonably good job in terms of personal trainer qualifications. It was relatively thorough, and we had a really good mentor, and she gave me quite a lot of advice around what the career might actually look like and how it wasn't anywhere near as easy as you might think it is. Even with that, I still had the expectation in my head that a lot of personal trainers do, that I was like, if I do 100 personal training sessions a month and I charge 30 quid, that's £3,000. Like I've never made I don't make £3,000 in 3 months in the job I do just now working in a supermarket. Like I'll be loaded. Like that's what a career I can choose here. Like I can make so much money. And I think the other side of like my expectations were also a little bit influenced by, and this is, I come back to this quite a lot, even now when I doubt myself and I doubt whether or not I'm in the right career. I, like a lot of trainers, saw that finding the gym and learning about exercise and about health and about nutrition probably was the first time in my life that I actually felt like I belonged in something. I was actually quite good at it. Like I got competent within the gym. And that probably set me up in a reasonably good frame of mind to be like, right, this has transformed my life. This has gave me a place to like really feel like Stuart. You know how like personal training does that to quite a lot of us? Like you find your career and you're like, wow, this is actually, like I really feel like I can be myself here for the first time in my life. So I think that was another piece of it as well, that kind of set me up for moving into it quite a lot. But to go back to your question, Nick, I think it was set by the reading I was doing online, by some of the conversations I was having, and by some of the stuff that I'd picked up in my qualification.
Would you say that, because when you kind of talk about those things about, you know, you felt that sense of belonging in the industry, you kind of gravitated towards, you know, your S&C stuff, the health side of things, feel competent in the gym, which makes you feel, you know, more safe in that environment, etc. And you almost like, if you compact that into a word, it's probably right, I found my passion almost, I guess.
Yeah.
Would you say, because it's a hard one I always try and articulate, because the industry, I think our job and our role is born out of passion, right? With a few of those ingredients in there, maybe some extra ones in there as well. But do you think, like, and we've got a lot of trainers probably watching this and listening to this back, who are new or maybe kind of questioning a few different things about their career through the last year. Do you feel that's enough? And if that isn't enough, just having that passion and following that passion, what else do you think needs to be kind of coupled onto that to drive that forward?
It's a really good question. I don't think passion is enough. I really, really don't. I think there has to be deeper reasons than that. And also there's like a side of this that like sometimes maybe you do just need to get on with it a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
I've thought about this quite a lot, and I'm not quite sure how to articulate it. Really interesting. I suppose a side of it that I will throw in that very much I fall back on now, and I think you guys do a great job of, and I think we do a good job of Lift the Bar, is just community. Like, if you can find your place to get support. Like, I mean, I suppose in some ways we're talking about how do you work out whether or not personal training is the career for you, right? That's almost like part of this question or line that we're talking here. And I don't quite know how to answer that. So I'll just give some of my experiences on it. I know that if you're waking up every single day, like, I cannot be bothered with this. This is not the career for me. I don't really like working with people. I've yet to find any joy in the coaching process or the results that my client gets anything like that, then maybe this career isn't for you and something else would be better suited to you. But if you have moments in personal training where you're like, holy shit, like this is so fulfilling. Like, I can't believe how much I love helping clients achieve this. I can't believe how much I love the process of growing my business or learning about all the cool things that are involved in our industry, from behavior change to marketing to the how to coach people better to communication, like all these fun things that really, when you actually get into the weeds of the how much there is to learn in this, I find that really quite fun. So if you find absolutely no joy in any of that, then maybe this isn't for you. But if you do, then I very much think this industry has a place for you. And at the end of the day, like, we're in a career just now where I don't think we think about this enough in personal training. I don't think we give it enough credit in the sense of really doing like good work here, right? We make a difference in people's lives. Like, we either allow them to live better, more enjoyable lives because they can move better with less pain and they feel more confident. Or they live longer, just generally with better life. So there's not too many careers that you can really say have that much of an impact on people's lives. Like, we mentioned this at the start about one of the books, Deep Work. The author Cal Newport, who you probably come across at one point in time, he's got a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You. And one of the things that's always stuck out from that book in my head is he had three things about like you want to try and find your way towards this within any career. You want to have autonomy, you want to have impact, and you want to have some form of creativity. And I think our career, not initially, but over time, can give you that, right? Mm-hmm. You can have control over your schedule. You can be creative with your program design or with your writing or your social media posts or your podcasting skills or your mentorship or whatever it is that you decide to do. There's a lot of flexibility in our industry. And then the last part is impact. I've already said about that. Like, you have, it's very clear the impact that you have with your clients and personal training. I've rabbited on quite a bit there, mate, and I've probably gone way off the question that you asked, but I'll throw it back to you guys.
No, it's bang on. It's bang on. I think you can kind of couple that up with as well, I guess, those three things are massive, aren't they? They really are. But there's two things when you're talking through that kind of flicked into my head. One was intent behind the passion. So searching for that, whether my values are really strong in having that impact or having control over my life so I can do X, Y, and Z to support my family or create this opportunity or whatever that may be. So I think that's a huge, huge thing with those three things. It's really interesting that. And I had another one there, but damn it, it's gone.
It'll come back.
Just whilst he's thinking about that, Stu, because it will come back, I'm sure. Whilst he's thinking about that, with all of that good impact and all of that that's so positive about the role, and so positive about the job that we do and all of that, why do you think, because obviously it's very, very, very common and we've all been through it, the three of us that are sat here, why do you think that personal trainers have so much self-doubt and level of kind of that level of imposter syndrome? Why do you think that's there so common?
Oh, good question, mate. I mean, I think at the core of it, a lot of us are, it's not like you, like when I said I worked in a supermarket and my job role in a supermarket was very, very clear. I was going to get paid really no matter what, but I had to do, like, I had to stack shelves, I had to make the shelves look nice, I had to serve customers. It's very, very clear what I had to do to get my wage. And even if I did that stuff suboptimally, I'd still get paid, right? But that's not the same in personal training. Unless you're in an employed role, the majority of our industry is self-employed in one form or another. And because of that, there's a lot on top of your shoulders for you to try and work through. You have to get clients in to make this work. If you don't get any clients in, you can't afford to pay your bills. And also, I think in our industry, like, a lot of the figures that stick out are what seem like, if you're on step one, they're on step 100. It's like, holy shit, how am I supposed to get anywhere near that? Like, there's these miles of staircases between what looks like where I need to be and where I actually am just now. So that's definitely an element too. I don't know if there's anything else I'd throw into that, Ant, but you said this at the start of that, like, it is so, so common to experience, not just in personal training, but in any aspect of any career, to feel like you are doubting yourself or that you're an imposter at times. But I think it is harder in our industry because there is more, I don't quite know the right word to say, but certainly the self-employed role has a lot to do with it. And then also there's the unfortunate truth of, like, you're just not set up well enough wandering into this industry. On our podcast, we spoke about how I quite often say your first few years in the industry are really your apprenticeship phase, right? Yeah. But that's not a written rule. That's not, walk into personal training on day one. When you walk into personal training on day one, you probably have the same mentality that us three had, and that you're like, this probably will be quite easy to make a decent bit of money here. Hopefully in a few years, I can just open my own gym and I'll make even more money. That looks like that from the outset. So I don't think we do a good enough job of setting trainers up for what the realities are of actually being a trainer when you walk in on day one and through your first few years.
No, I think you're 100% right. And something to tap into, there's a couple of bits to tap into there. I think the first one is that you're right, in a sense of people have come probably from a job where there is structure and they get paid anyway. So then turning into a, this, into a career where it's led by passion, which is what you boys were talking about a minute ago, it's really, really difficult then to double down on the stuff that you've never really had to experience before. Because like we, I think we talked about this on your podcast, was normally that level of self-doubt from our experience comes back to there not being a real clear plan, like in place, and like a direction and clarity of where they are now and where they want to go. And then where they want to go as personal trainers, coming back to your point, is normally 100 steps away from where they are now, or what they think it is, which is a lot of it is comparison, isn't it? Which is massive and is huge. And for us free to sit here and go, don't compare, like a lot of fit pros do, you shouldn't compare yourself to others, right? Everyone's just going to flip that switch, are they? Everyone goes through it. All three of us have been through that. You'll compare yourself. I remember the first PT who I compared myself against, then tried to learn from, and all of that type of stuff. It's a normal process to go through. But something that you touched on, and I think it was on our podcast, or I've heard you speak about it on someone else's, is that if I'm a new personal trainer now coming into a new role, and whatever level I get to and the experience that I get, I quote in you here, Stu, and you can elaborate on this a little bit more. At the end of the day, if we're talking about steps again, I only have to be on the second step and they're on the first step at all times. Just elaborate on that point that you brought up. I'm sure you brought it up on our podcast, but you might have brought it up on something else.
Yeah, I just think it's like as trainers, we often think we have to be experts. Like I often think about my colleague at LTB, Greg Slater. Greg is one of these people who, it's not like this for him, and this is very much removing some of the credit that he deserves from the processes that he goes through to learn. But it seems like Greg is one of these people who can eat a book and it goes into his brain. You know what I mean? Like he reads through it and he just seems to be able to understand it. And you can look at somebody like Greg and go, how the hell are you supposed to get to that type of level to help clients? But the thing is, as a trainer, you don't have to be there. If your client, as you alluded to there, Ant, is on, let's say, level one, you as a coach only really need to be, in actual fact, you can be on level one with them. Your knowledge doesn't need to be greater than theirs, but your ability to coach them and to keep them accountable and to ask them questions that help them remove some of the barriers from their life needs to be, that's more of the core things that need to be in place as a trainer. I don't think it's as essential to have this expert level of knowledge that we often think we need to get to have in. With that said, though, I mean, like, I always think as trainers, we should be lifelong learners. I think we should always want to improve the way that we do things. And one of the mentalities that I think served me really well after I'd had a phase, and we may get into this a bit in time. I had a phase where I was at 18 sessions a week, which was the most money I'd ever earned in my life. And over a 2-week period, I dropped down to like 4 sessions and it was horrific. And I spent a month in like a deep hole just being like, this is not the industry or the place for me. But one of the biggest changes I had in my head, and this does relate back to your question, Ant, was that I started to view personal training as like a craft rather than it being just a career. Like you could say that, I suppose you could relate it to like carpentry in some ways. As a new carpenter, your focus is not on how do you sell the table or market the table that you've built. It's on how do I build the nicest table, right? It's on what are the different joints that connect all this together and stuff. And I think as trainers, we don't spend enough time actually thinking about our careers as crafts. Like, how do we get really good? If you're a personal trainer, an in-person personal trainer, your goal during your first few years or throughout your career should be to make your sessions as good as you possibly fucking can. Like, make them incredible things. Think about the customer experience. Think about the communication element. Think about your program design. Think about how you discuss behavior change. Think about the way that you reflect on your sessions after you've done it. Think about all the things that come into that that can make you as good as you possibly can be. Again, I've gone off on another tangent here and I've got a habit of doing this, but again, to you guys.
I think that's absolutely bang on. I really do, because again, it kind of encapsulates me looking around, especially over the past year, where all we've had, the only real outlet we've had into the industry is through social media, right? And as you say, the people that are maybe the perception is of where you need to be are the ones that are more viewable online, aren't they? I mean, they're the ones seen more often than not. So that comparison is huge, but and it almost kind of says, well, I need to do that because that's the only, maybe the only influence I have at this present moment. And I guess, and it's kind of one of them things when, and I remember what I was going to say at the beginning, which is relevant to now, is like, it's doubling down on your passion, which is that, isn't it? It is the coaching, it is helping people, it's being on the gym floor with people, it is technique correction, it is queuing, it is that kind of stuff. But that growth mindset in regards to continually developing that craft, because it is a skill. Like the level three is information that you've memorized. That's all, in my opinion, that is, you know, it's information you've memorized and you've learned. The application of that's where, and that's a skill, the communication, the human behavior and understanding people and adapting and whatnot. And skills, like any type of skill, has to be practiced and honed and not perfected, because who knows where that perfection level is, but it's that constant awareness of trying to deliver better and be better for your clients and et cetera, where our attention gets pulled over to this side and we don't understand it. And that's what makes things a little bit overwhelming, doesn't it? Because we're not competent in the sales, the social media, the YouTube, the, I don't understand algorithms, my posts aren't getting enough reach, whatever it is. It's that's where I think a lot of the overwhelm comes for people, and that self-doubt in a certain sense when it comes to, specifically over the last 12 months. And I don't know if you might have had some experience in this yourself, like you alluded to, but also maybe drawing on some of the conversations you've had with some of the guys in LTB, like how do you process those types of thoughts to, I guess, not maybe solve it, because it's a process, it always is a process to go through, but you got any kind of top tips or any type of kind of perspective on how you would move forward with that or process those types of thoughts for people?
Yeah, I think I've got quite a lot of thoughts on this because I have thought about it quite a lot and experienced it quite a lot. So where do I start with this? I think one of the most important things in terms of processing your thoughts to do with these more challenging things like overwhelm and self-doubt and imposter syndrome, and we can really package them all together, right? They all kind of, you can speak to a lot of trainers about what they feel and they might label it differently, but it's all kind of boils down to those same kind of three things. I think one of the most important things that I've learned is that I need to find a way to externalize the thoughts that are going on, the more challenging thoughts. And that can be very different for different people, but I know something I've gained a lot from is counseling and therapy. And I always think it's important to try and normalize this, because I still think we do a much better job now of discussing mental health. We're very much, as personal trainers, in the physical health world that promotes mental health, but we don't think about the mental health element first as often as I think we should. I've gained a lot from having conversations with therapists about the really challenging things that I've had. And I'm not saying that has to be something that you as a trainer need to think about, but I do think having a way to externalize your thoughts to someone, or through writing down what's actually going on and questioning whether there is any truth to that, is essential. Like, I'll give you an experience that I had recently with this. We just finished running our 30-day social media challenge at LTB, and I lead that. And for the week before I run that, this has happened every single time I've run it, I spend the entire week in this horrible pit of self-doubt and feeling like I have no right to be running a social media challenge, because who the hell am I in the industry to talk about social media? Which is completely unfair on myself, because I have experiences, I have tried lots of things, I have things that I can teach trainers about that. And yet, for that whole week, I find myself in this, like, if you speak to my wife, she's like, he is a total nightmare for that week. And I need like a pat on the back and a reassurance and somebody to talk through and just make sense of my thoughts. And I think a lot of the time when we're in these really difficult phases as trainers or just as people, what we do is we bury ourselves away in our work, we bury ourselves in our phone, we try and just cover the cracks with it rather than actually trying to make sense of it. Something else that really helps me when it comes to processing it is, and I hope I'm okay to get some, like, talk about some of the deeper things here. But like, solitude is something else that I just think we, it's so much harder to come by nowadays because we're so attached to our phone and always feeling like we need to be on social media and we need to be putting up a post on Instagram and we need to be learning about things and we need to be in contact with our clients or DMing people about coaching services. And we don't ever give ourselves enough time to actually like fucking sort the closet of your brain out to be like, right, throw this out, put that to the side. That can go on the back burner. This is the priority just now. This is where my attention needs to go. So those are, I suppose, some of the big things, Nick. So I did make a couple of notes. I'm just going to see if there's anything else that I wrote down. I think those are the big things, mate, honestly. I think if you can find a way to externalize it by writing or by talking to trusted people in your life, maybe through a community or mentors that you have, or if you have good parents like that. My parents are reasonably good, but they're not always the people I turn to for advice on situations like that. I'm better to turn to somebody like Chris Burgess who runs Lift the Bar. So if you can externalize it, give yourself some space to actually process what's going on. I think that's certainly what I have found to be most effective. One of the things whenever I talk to LTV members about this, they're like, oh, but is that enough? That feels like it's, I need to do more than that. But like, I just think if we can start to try and process these thoughts a bit more and make better sense of them, we've got a much better opportunity of better managing them. I don't think we ever get to a point with these challenging things that we go through of ever them. Like, you guys probably feel this as well. Like, you still doubt yourselves now, right? You still probably feel like imposters every now and then. So it's very normal to experience these things. But if you can take a bit of time to make a bit of sense of them, to get yourself out of the darker holes that you're in and then spend some time reflecting about what actually went on there, what helped you get out, what triggered you into that, what things did you start to do that got you away from that and got you back to, as you said, I think, Ant, about like finding a better plan for moving yourself forwards. If you can make a bit more sense to all of that stuff, the next time this comes around, because it will come back around, you will feel like an imposter again, you will doubt yourself, you will get overwhelmed. The next time that stuff comes around, you're better set for managing it and it not being as destructive to your entire life.
It's mega, that is. Mega.
Yeah, mate, it's unbelievable. And what's great about this is obviously the three of us are sat here, Nick's been in the industry for however long, 20 years, myself 17 years, yourself 13 years, and we're talking about things that have happened recently, like obviously you guys at Lift the Bar delivering an exceptional service, that social media course everyone talks about how amazing it is, but there's still an element of doubt from someone who delivers and leads it at that level. And I think that's really important right now for any personal trainer sat watching this or watching it back or listen to it on the podcast and so on. It's just to kind of take that in, because at every level you're going to have it. Like I was relating back to that first time I was asked to write something for Fitness First members that went onto their website. And then it was a program that sat on the reception, and then some like coached the PTs. And then it was certain things like working with the first athlete. Like, we've talked about this a hell of a lot. There's going to be levels of it to this, but I think what's really important, what you've just talked about and nailed, is externalizing it and talking to someone about it is, in my opinion, never been more important. Now, if we rewind 10, 15 years, I was definitely proud, stubborn. Like, I didn't open up about everything that was in my mind as a self-employed person. It was just kind of, yeah, there was never in a million years that I would talk about any of that stuff to any other personal trainer, a manager of the gym. There was no mentors knocking about back then, so I couldn't externalize it to someone who's been through it before. So what I'm getting at is like this multiple opportunity to do that now, whether it's an LTB group, a PTC group, this group, wherever. There's just tons of opportunity to do that. And I think it's really important how to relate this back as well. Is the way you've just talked about that is kind of unpacking your mind of all of the stuff that you feel like you have to do because the industry tells you have to do it. It's very similar to how they coach clients, right? A client doesn't know what diet is best, what exercise routine is best, what to try first, what to try. They don't understand their triggers that kind of offset behaviors and all of that. And a personal trainer's role is to listen to a client as much as they possibly can and coach that from them so they don't have to worry about it as much and kind of let the client just externalize their problems, identify triggers. And then for that over time to coach the client to success, to be more accountable, motivated, get results, all of that. I suppose it's a version of that, even if it's with the manager of a gym. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's massively, massively important because simply, it's that level of acceptance that you can't do it all on your own, because you're asked to spin so many plates as a personal trainer. It's just mad. So I think it's a great point. Nick, you look as though you're ready for a question.
Yeah. just talking through that, like, it's not a nice experience feeling so like down on yourself and having that kind of imposter syndrome or thinking you're not good enough for something and whatnot. But is there, I actually think there's an element or a portion of it that actually important to have.
Yeah.
To an extent.
Pressure 100%.
Back, isn't it? Yeah, I think it's, I mean, we've normalized a lot, and I think it certainly in times like that, it keeps me like away from this pedestal that it is very easy to get yourself on, to feel like you are, like, as a trainer, when you get to, I don't know, like 20, 30 sessions, something like that, you can feel indestructible. You can feel like you've made it and that you're the best trainer in the world. And these phases sometimes of like, I don't really know how to best sum them up, but let's just call them like the darker phases sometimes encourage you to take a step back and actually go, wow, I'm still human. And I've often said that, like, one of the things I think when you come into the industry, like certainly I did, where I came from studying strength and conditioning, one of the things I had was that when I started, because I could not empathize with my clients. Like, I've always been the skinny kid. I've never had a weight problem. I've had a weight gain problem. When I try and go through massing phases, I get to the point I'm like, I don't want any more food, which is such a silly problem to have. But it's still like my experience. It's the opposite of what most of my clients had. So when they would come to me and be like, I don't have any motivation to train, I can't be bothered coming in today, I overate at the weekend, I just judge them and be like, what the hell do you mean you didn't do any of that stuff? So these darker phases, I think, sometimes like remind us that we have these struggles, and that it's okay to have these struggles, and you have to take a step back sometimes and acknowledge that maybe you're trying to do too much, you're putting too much pressure on yourself, or you actually do need to speak to somebody professionally, or you have to seek out other educational opportunities because you can't do all of this yourself and you can't spin all these plates, which I think most trainers will admit takes you a bit of time to realize. Like, initially in the industry, I think we come in with a bit of ego and we think we can do it all and make a success of things. And maybe having these periods can be the trigger that actually pushes you towards getting some good education or a good mentorship group or to speak to somebody professionally.
Mega, that is. Stu, have you ever been in the position where you've kind of gone, not really sure whether this industry is for me? And if so, was there one thing you could pinpoint that made you continue or did you have that thought?
Yeah, I said, I'm sure I already said about the like 18 sessions.
Yeah.
And it was within my first like 6 months, I think I got up to 18 sessions, which I was really proud of and delighted with. And then over the Christmas period, I lost the majority of those clients and went down to 4 sessions. And for the month after that, I struggled to pay my bills. I had to ask my mum and dad for money to help me to pay my rent. I was really questioning whether or not I should go back to the supermarket job and just push personal training to the side, or I should go and find a job like so many of the other people that I went to university with were doing, that were safer jobs, nicer income, a bit more consistent with your working hours, that type of thing. And I think the thing, honestly, that kept me going, there was probably 2 big things. The first one was something I've already said, and that, like, I knew I had seen from my own experience how much the gym could help in physical activity and concentrating on your nutrition and health and that type of stuff, how much it could give me as a person. And I'd already seen that in some of the clients that I'd worked with. Mm-hmm. Even in the small amount that I still had left, there would still be these moments where I was like, wow, this is such a beautiful thing, like helping a client hit their first push-up or losing their first 10 pounds or reporting that they had got up a set of stairs without feeling breathless for the first time in years. Like, those type of things, they really did give me a real sense of fulfillment. The other thing I had that really helped me at that point was the manager of the gym that I was in, who I got close with through the shadowing and then just through, we had weekly or monthly conversations. He'd been a trainer in the industry for about 10 years. So he just reminded me that it was really normal. that I'd had that experience, that I'd lost all those clients, and that I could either wallow in my own self-pity of how hard life had been to me and how tough it was as a personal trainer, or I could actually start to, as you said, Ant, put a bit of a plan in place and say, like, right, well, probably, Stuart, you don't really know what you're doing here in personal training. You've concentrated majority of your time on trying to generate leads, but you've spent no time on retention. You've spent no time better understanding how to communicate with your clients. And honestly, you've taken on clients way too quickly. Like, getting to 18 sessions within 6 months was way too quick for me to manage. I couldn't still provide a good enough service because I didn't really know what I was doing. Like, you said, I think it, Nick, it was you said right at the start about like podcast people and some of the lessons I've extracted for them. You guys all know Eric Helms, who like writes for Mass and runs 3D Muscle Journey, is very popular on social media, is very popular as a podcast guest, is a great thinker, knows exercise and nutrition based stuff and strength training as well as anybody, as well as being a great competitor himself. And he, when I had him on the podcast at like episode 200, he said something that's always stuck with me about how you don't want early career success because you're not ready for it. You're not, you don't know your value as a personal trainer yet. You don't actually know what it is that you provide in the industry. And you don't even know, like, the other thing is you often talk about like, oh, you need to get a niche as a new trainer. You need to have a perfect niche when you start. And it's like, wait, but you don't even know who you like training. You know, you don't even know who that looks like. Like, that's the great thing about working in like a commercial gym is you get so many experiences of different people and different injuries and different people with different values and different ages and genders and everything like that. So I had that experience at that point. And I think the two main things, and we've reiterated these quite a lot within the podcast so far, were having other people to help me work through it, normalizing it, and probably being able to step back and go, actually, this is a bit on you here, Stuart. The industry's been good to you so far. Let's try and take a bit of a growth mindset on this and learn about some of the ways that you haven't been able to provide a good enough service to your clients so far.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting about this is the fact that, obviously, we talk about a hell of a lot that, and we've covered this question with yourself, regards to expectations when we come into the industry are very, very different now to the expectations of a new personal trainer coming into the industry. I think we were in the mindset back then that yes, this was great to be in a place where it's passionate and we could probably earn money for something that we love to do. But I always think there was an element of there's a grind to this and this might take a while back then, 15 to 20 years ago. Whereas now, personal trainers are shoved in the face all the time that they can earn 30 to 40 grand as quickly as possible. They could be an online coach, which obviously they could. They've got these gurus throwing at them, they can earn 10K a month and all of that. It seems like there is now a sprint to, I want to get to this amount of clients. I want to earn this amount of revenue. I need to have, like, it's the whole holy grail of everyone needs to have. The first goal that every single personal trainer seems to have these days is like 30 sessions a week. That's my goal. And there's no context behind that. It's just like, that's what I view as success because the people around me have that. And one thing that really gets me, and I know gets people who've been in the industry for quite a while, is not embracing and not enjoying that process. And my last point on this is something you just picked up on there, is that I know this is going to sound really bad, but there's times when me and Nick talk to a personal trainer who went through what you went through, which is going from 18 to 4 sessions. And me and Nick are like, brilliant. And that personal trainer, me and Nick, like, brilliant. And that personal trainer sat there thinking, you horrible people, like, what are you saying that for? Because genuinely, there's, for me, there's a tipping point in every single person's personal trainer career where they need to feel like slightly, and for better word, like they failed slightly. Because that's the point for me where normally a lot of personal trainers break through. My point on that is I just winged it for 4 or 5 years. I said to you before, my missus fell pregnant when I was 24 and I was like, okay, I need to take this serious now. And then I just started to apply the stuff that people had taught me that I thought I was too good to listen to and just didn't listen anyway. So I went and applied all that and miraculously I got really, really busy. And do you know what I mean? So what I'm getting at is that if you are a PT watching, listening, whatever to this right now, and you've gone through elements of that through COVID where you've had lots of clients, you've gone back and you've back at the start for me, that's a really good thing, because now if you are proactive enough as a personal trainer and you start to put the right things in place, like, you're going to know what that feels like. So you won't go back to that spot again, more than likely. And I think it's a really important part in a personal trainer's career, weirdly enough.
You learn from the worst. The worst, the hardest times are unfortunately the hardest times to go through, and they are dark and they are depressing and they are filled with doubt and overwhelm and worry. They also teach you a lot. And I mean, something that, like, if you're going through one of these phases just now, something I will say is, like, patience is so underrated in our industry. You're absolutely right, Anne, that it's the promised land that is always promised, that you're going to get this point of success in personal training and it's going to be the best thing ever. And yet, one of the best bits of advice that Chris has always given me when I was building up my client base was just focus on getting in the next client, like one client. You don't need 10 clients, Stuart. Just focus on getting the next client in. Like, where's that client going to come from? And think about the ways that you can get that client in rather than being so far ahead of yourself. I was going to say something else there, but it has gone through my mind, so I'm going to open the floor back up.
I just think my last point on this, regards to having that mindset, is obviously it's not helped with the things that I mentioned before, regards to everyone on social media. And I would just really encourage personal trainers to take their own advice with this. Like, their own advice is for their clients to embrace the process, stay consistent and all of that type of stuff. But that's embrace the process and stay consistent to the plan they put in place with the client to get them results. When it comes to levels of self-doubt, comparison, overwhelms, 9 times out of 10, after working with thousands of PTs, it normally comes back to there's no clear plan. Like, there's no goals, there's no clear plan, and there's nothing, no direction to work towards. As soon as they reel that in and start to focus on that, you start to ignore the noise. You start to minimize comparison. Don't get me wrong, it'll still be there, but I've got a plan and I know what I need to do to execute that plan. So if I just concentrate on myself and that one client that you've just talked about, that recruit, then I'm going to be moving in the right direction. And then it comes back down to what we talk about in self-determination theory. I'm feeling more competent at that. It's making me feel successful. So I'm now more confident. So do you understand what I mean? And now that's the layers and the process, and it's the ladder of the personal training industry, isn't it? And that's just embracing all of that. And I think that's so important. And we need to accept that more and more as personal trainers and as an industry, that if you want to be here for a long time, then it's going to take a while to get to where they want to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. And something that stuck out from, we've referred to the episode that we did a lot, Ant and Nick, but one of the things you said, Ant, that has stuck in my head and that I found myself saying a few times, is it took like 5 years-ish for you to find your feet in the industry. And that is something, again, we don't really talk about. We don't talk about the apprenticeship years and the struggle phase and the really challenging times and what you can do about them. And we don't really talk about the reality of the fact that when you're thrown in at the deep end in the industry, it may take you 5 to 10 years to actually start to feel like you know the direction you're going in, you know the place you're going in. And again, that's normal in, I think, any career where you first start. It's normal in any new skill that you go to try. So I think we probably need to do a better job of just normalizing that taking your time and being patient with this stuff is perfectly okay.
Just checking if there's any questions. Andy Rose.
Top man.
Stu's a good guy, but his football team is shit.
Yeah, it's not wrong there. My football team are absolutely fucking hopeless. Although he knows all about that, being a Rangers man of a team that are only really 5 years old.
Matt Red Carpenter by John Gordon basically talks about how to become a craftsman and not a carpenter. Yeah, great shout. Lauren, I've experienced imposter syndrome and not feeling like I'm a good PT. I don't look like a PT, etc. I found that if I have to focus on what I'm doing, not what anyone else is doing, and I have to think of it like a horse race. We are in the separate gates, and the horse is just trying to get to the finish line and isn't thinking about the others. Yeah, 100%, mate.
I think something on Lauren makes a really nice point there. And I just want to throw in one more thing about the self-doubt stuff that I've found is like, I think if you can develop awareness of like your triggers for when you go through these phases, that's really quite helpful. And I know that I always spend way more time scrolling through social media when I'm feeling shitter about life. I always know that I am much less likely to exercise and look after myself and do the habits that actually help me feel like a decent human day in, day out. Like when I'm overwhelmed by the stuff that I'm doing for LTB or anything else, the first thing to go out the window is my own exercise and my own 10,000 step rule and my own nutrition and my own rule of no social media after like 7 o'clock and make sure I'm having those phases away from it. So I think she makes a really good point there in the sense of like comparison is such a big aspect of this. And if you as a trainer find that one of the things that really pushes you into the edge of doubt and feeling rubbish about your career and being in the industry is comparison, it's on you to start finding the ways that mean that you don't do that as often. And maybe that means that you have to log on to social media, put your post up, send a couple of DMs and log back off and delete it from your phone and make sure you can't get on it on your internet, which I have to do. Like, I think we have to be that, we have to treat ourselves like children nowadays with these type of things. I don't think we have a choice because it's too fun to see that little heart button appear on Instagram. That's like, has somebody commented on my post? What did they say? I'm validated. You know, like we have to be as harsh on ourselves with that. So I think you make a really good point there with the comparison aspect of that, Lauren. And that's definitely something I've experienced.
It's definitely, I was thinking about this because I'm trying to do something separate. And the title of it was, you know, trying to edit down your life, so to speak, and the things that you tell your clients you've got to take on board yourself, because a lot of it is completely the same thing, it's just different aspects, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a big one that. We will share the success.
We have to close with the podcast guest question, because we've talked a lot there, and there's a lot. I think, listen, for a lot of personal trainers, more like 99.9% of personal trainers will resonate with everything that we've just gone through today, like, and will take loads from what you've said, Stu. There's loads of points in there that they can take and practice and apply and be aware of and recognize triggers and stuff like that, which is madly important, like so important. And I think will help get out of their own head quite a bit. I think there's going to be a lot of that off the back of it. But we can't let you go without that last question, Nick, that we wanted to ask about the podcast guests. So I'll let you ask it.
Yeah, apart from obviously you brought up Eric, his little nugget, were there any more things that stand out in your mind that would, I guess, be relevant to what we've spoken about today and help any trainer, or just maybe it's not relevant to today, but any kind of golden nuggets that you've taken over the hundreds of guests you've had on?
It's quite a lot of pressure, isn't it? It's like, have you actually learned anything from anybody that you've
I expect me and Nick to be in these top three.
I've already given you guys credit. You deserve no more. Okay, a recent one that definitely comes to mind was Emma Story Gordon and her saying that like one of the fears we have on social media now is being called out, which is really, really common for trainers, I think, especially if you're newer in the industry. Even if you're not newer, you still sometimes think, am I right to put this thing out? Is this likely to offend somebody? And the mentality that she had, and Emma sometimes puts out, the word isn't controversial, but she touches on the topics that I think we like to stay away from. Certainly, I don't feel qualified or experienced enough talk about some of the things that Emma talks about as an example. And her mentality on this was just around, nobody expects you to be right all of the time. And I mean, I had an experience once where I put a post out, and this was in the first like year of personal training, and I put up something quite offensive. It was a sexist thing that I didn't think about. I just had never, my male brain had never even considered it from the female perspective, and it was offensive. And quite a few of my clients actually commented on it. One text me and was like, Stuart, you have to rethink the way you've said this, because it's an offensive way to say it. That's horrible at the time. But guess the only person in this world remembers that? Me. I lost none of my clients off the back of that. I acknowledged in the next post that I put up that I was absolutely wrong, that I was sorry, that I'm going to do a bit of work to try and learn why I was wrong. And I'm going to speak to people around why I'd done that thing or what was wrong about it. And I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen again. So if you put out a post on something and you're a little bit worried about it being something that's on the edge, just remember that nobody expects you to be right all the time. And even if you do something wrong and somebody tells you a different way to think about it, that's not a bad thing. Like, we're all in this to try and grow as people, right? We all want to get a bit better. And I don't think we should let the fear of something like that get in the way of us trying to put across our opinions and perspectives onto something like social media. A second one that I'll throw in that probably aligns with a bit of what we talked about here, Andy Morgan from Ripped Body. He does really good work. He does decent stuff on social media as well. He's a great writer. He talked about when writing, he said, I think his words were, I just make sure that I stay in my lane and I write to the people that I serve and not to my peers. And again, that really feeds into, I think, similar to the Emma thing. Like, don't write with other personal trainers in mind. We all know this. They're not going to pay your bills, but they're not the people that you're trying to impress. The people that you're trying to resonate with are your clients and the people that you actually try to serve in this world, not your peers, not your colleagues. So they're certainly two people that stick out, but there's so many. Like, I mean, one of the best guests I've ever had who I just love speaking to, and I'm going to get her back on soon, is Krista Scott Dixon from Precision Nutrition. She's taught me so much about the like, one of the words I remember using was like the emotional and mental stance that you have to have as a coach or personal trainer in order to deliver like good personal training sessions. And I love that, just that there's like this way that you can get into your head when you go into your PT sessions or your coaching sessions. Is such a, I don't know, that really resonated with me. So I could go on and on about this, because the guests that I've had on are just, I would go for a beer with every single one of them. That's kind of one of the things that I think about when I go for a podcast guest. It's like, would I want to sit down with this person and have a beer or a drink or something like that? And if the answer isn't no, then they're probably not right for the podcast. So all of the people I've had on are just great people. And you guys fit into that, so I'll give you some credit there.
Look, he's happy now.
Well, not, Nick doesn't, but it's all right. I know you can't say that whilst he's here. You know what? It's an important point, just to wrap this up, because Marzane has put it into the comments. Definitely one of my fears. Do I know enough to post about it? Is it offensive? Is it going to trigger in the wrong way of someone out there? Will someone think I have no clue what I'm talking about, and so on? The point that Emma made, and the point that then you've just made regards to staying in your lane, on what staying in your lane is for me, is to help and serve your demographic, not your peers. And I was definitely guilty of that, is that if you're going to put a blog or an article back in the day, was the stuff that you potentially used to write used to more appeal to your peers than it did do your audience. It was just a thing that you 100%. Did. Yeah. And now from a social media perspective, a lot of personal trainers worry about that stuff plainly, because normally 9 times out of 10, what they've got in their mind is probably off something that they've learned from someone else who's pitched it at a higher level. And to regurgitate that to your audience, that might be why you feel a bit lacking in confidence. But as long as you know it helps one person on your page, and you're on that same step or that step above that you talked about before, that's all that matters, right? That's all that matters. And you know what? Like you've just said, and like Emma said, if you get negative feedback, that's great, because it's going to help you make you think differently and position it better next time. So, wicked, mate. Quality conversation. Sorry, I've got my doors open here, because for the first time this year, we have some sun in Manchester. So it doesn't happen very often. I know, it doesn't happen very often. And now it seems like everyone's out having a party when they shouldn't do. Do you know what I mean, Stu? It's illegal right now. So, yeah. If you hear background noise, I apologise. I'll tell the neighbours off after. I think that's it. We're covered, haven't we? All angles. Nick, we're happy?
Yeah, brilliant. It's really, really good chat as always, mate. Anything, where can they find you or Lift the Bar? What's the best places to get hold of?
Yeah, if you want to reach out to me at all, probably the best place is either Lift the Bar's Instagram, which is just Lift the Bar, because I kind of run the messages on that. You can email me stuart@liftthebar.com. If you want to have a look at any of LTB stuff, or just Lift the Bar as the website, and then LTB podcast is the podcast.
Yeah, oh, just to add on to that, if there's a subject you're wondering about or the podcast. It's a part of my weekly kind of schedule, is to tune into the latest episode, and it has been for ages now. So if you're a PT out there and haven't, for some unknown reason, heard of it or listened to one, get all over that, because there's, as you said, 200 odd, nearly 300 hours, sorry, of like amazing conversation. So, mate, really appreciate your time. Really, really appreciate your time, pal.
Thank you very much for putting me in the other side of this. It is, I do not like being on the other side of an interview. I hate giving up control, but I appreciate you guys asking for my insights on things, and had a really great time there. So thank you.
Cheers, man. Thanks, Stu. Cheers, mate.